both groups increase available dopamine in the brain. Dopamine is one of the primary neurotransmitters that we think is one of the kind of big culprits in ADHD. And by increasing available dopamine in the brain, these medicines help our brain cells send signals to each other better.
Welcome to the ADHD Essentials Podcast. I'm your host, Brendan Mahan. I'm an ADHD professional who has been working in the field for 10 years. I'm on the organizing committee for the International Conference on ADHD and a board member of the Men's ADHD Support Group. Registration for the Spring 2024 session of the ADHD Essentials Parenting Groups is now open. This round begins on May 20th. We'll meet for 1 hour twice a week on Mondays and Wednesdays over the course of 8 weeks. One section meets at 12 p.m. Eastern and the other at 5 p.m. Eastern. The 12 p.m. Eastern section is exclusive for parents of teens, but the 5 p.m. section is open to all parents. These groups have shown to improve the cooperation and relationships between parents and their children. We do that with ADHD-friendly strategies that improve communication, support independence, and reduce the overall anxiety in the home. Over the last 5 years, I've helped hundreds of parents address the challenges they face as a result of ADHD and anxiety. And I'm sure I can help you as well. Here's past attendee Troy sharing some of his experience.
The feel and the air and the just the whole vibe in our house has changed. Every time we finish one of these sessions, it's almost like I feel closer to my kid. It's like I always want to go and hug them after we finish these sessions. You have given me permission to chill out a little bit with being a parent and just give him space, just be a little bit more accepting. And so, yeah, I mean, I just sort of like in awe of how wonderful a father he must be. And that certainly has an impact on me. I really enjoy these sessions and I get a lot out of them for sure.
Check out the link in the show notes for more information about these groups or email me at brendan@adhdessentials.com to set up a free information call. Welcome to the show. Today, I am once again joined by my friend, Dr. Carolyn Lynch Parcells. That's right, it's a rock block of Dr. Carolyn. Carolyn is a pediatrician with ADHD who can talk about the disorder from a number of directions. You can find her on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as the ADHD MD. In an episode that is long overdue, Dr. Carolyn talks about ADHD medication, primarily stimulants. We'll cover non-stimulants in a future episode. Carolyn discusses the role of medication as part of a gold standard treatment plan. Medication as a protective factor for both kids and adults, meds and substance use, and the importance of factoring a risk-benefit ratio into your decision regarding whether or not to take medication. All right, let's get rolling.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dr. Carolyn Lynch Parcells. I'm a board-certified pediatrician, and I am also an adult human who has ADHD herself.
I'm having you on today because I've never covered medication, and I need to. We're over 250 episodes in, so it's time to do that. It was probably time to do that 200 episodes ago. And that's part of your jam. It's one of the things you present on and talk about. So lead us to where we need to go.
The medication side of things, I think, is something that oftentimes people wait to address, right? Because it's an important topic. It's a critical topic, but it's also not always the most fun topic. And it's kind of a tricky one sometimes, I think, to talk about. Because there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about medications, whether you're talking about medications for kids or medications for adults. So it's definitely one that I think people tend to tread lightly.
I've taken to avoiding it because of social media. Because I look on like Facebook and Twitter and people are like, I'm taking Concerta or Vyvanse. What about that? And I'm like, I'm not a doctor. It's not my place to advise you. And Dr. Facebook isn't a thing. Like, ask
oh, Lord,
your doctor.
Thank you.
But you're a doctor, so you can tell us.
Dr. Google is not where to find your information, please. So let's jump into it. So, you know, first of all, addressing a little bit as to why we even need to have the conversation, right? Why do we use medications to treat ADHD? And the simple answer is research. right? The data shows us that certain medications can be very helpful for really about 85% or even more than that of people with ADHD, and can be a really critical and important part of an overall treatment plan. And yes, I said overall treatment plan, because I'm not sitting here to suggest that medication is the end-all be-all magic bullet, one thing that will fix everything, nor am I suggesting that medication is necessarily the right thing for everyone. And while I'm at it, let me just say that nothing I say in this podcast should be taken to constitute medical advice, nor should it replace the medical advice of your provider. This is for educational purposes only. But, you know, it can be a really important part of an overall treatment plan for a lot of people. Like I've started to say, I've always kind of said pills don't build skills, right? That's a favorite little adage that a lot of us have heard. But I've actually extended that to be pills don't build skills, but they sure as heck help us use them. And that is part of where I really see the purpose of medicine and ADHD is using medication for ADHD can help us to focus long enough to actually be able to learn and integrate and store the skills we need to use. And then in addition to that, medication can help us to actually pause and access those skills and that knowledge and utilize it when we need it. As Dr. Russell Barkley likes to say, ADHD is not a disorder of knowing what to do. It's a disorder of doing what we know. And that's one of the big places where medication can come in handy. The way I kind of describe what I see as the goal for medication is what I like to call the X-Men analogy.
You already won me over.
Brendan's heard me say this one before, but so my X-Men analogy is this. If you think about any of the X-Men of their origin story, right? Of course, their powers were thought to be bad or evil, a mutation in a negative sense. And some of the X-Men just have to learn how to harness their powers in order to use them for good as opposed to evil. But some of them actually need equipment. Cyclops is my favorite example because this dude's got laser beams flying out his eyeballs. He cannot control it. And that is unchecked. Fairly destructive, not necessarily altogether pleasant for him or others, skill to have. So he has his visor. But the key here is the visor does not take away or eliminate his laser beams. It gives him the control over when he uses the laser beams and when he doesn't. And ideally, that's what we're looking for from the medicine. We don't want the medicine to change our personality or make us somebody different or take away our creativity, our energy level, our fabulousness, or any of the other wonderful things that come from the way our brains work. We want the medicine to give us control over the ADHD and control over those gifts as opposed to the ADHD having control over us. So that's kind of my spiel that I always kind of preface the whole medication conversation with, because I think it's important for us to kind of understand what the goal is and why we're even having the conversation in the first place.
As a guy who's been reading X-Men comics for 35 years, I want to compliment myself on my restraint. Thank
you. I think that's awesome. Well,
I'm
actually,
not geeking out too hard on that.
you'll appreciate this, Brendan, because so I used to call that the superhero analogy, mm-hmm. even though I used Cyclops, right? He's always right. been my example. And I used it, I called it the superhero analogy because that's my jam. And you know, a lot of the folks in our community kind of expressed to me the fact that we don't always like the superhero analogy because while, yes, there are some gifts that come along with the way our brains work, some people feel like calling it our superpower belittles the challenges or undermines the challenges that we also face. And yep. I get that. I totally get that. And so I wanted to be sensitive to that. And I was trying to figure out what to call it. And one of our mutual friends, Zach, on the planning committee for the conference with us, was the one, because I use this in one of my talks, he's the one that was like, well, wait a minute, why don't you call it the X-Men analogy? And I was like, yes! So we got to thank Zach for that one.
Thank you, Zach.
But anywho, so that's kind of why we use medicine. So then, what are the medicines?
Well, we got two kinds, right? We got stimulant and non-stimulant.
Exactly. So, and that's how I like to break it up, is non-stimulant and stimulant. And I'm going to start with the stimulant medications, because the stimulant medications are still, by research, considered the gold standard, first line, best option for most people with ADHD, because they've just continued to be shown to be more effective than any of our non-stimulant options, at least by themselves. And I'll come back around to what I mean by that in a minute. But within the stimulant medications, there's actually two families within that family. There's the methylphenidates and there's the amphetamines. The methylphenidates are things like Ritalin, Metadate, Concerta, of course, is the big one, Jornay PM, Cotempla, a bunch of kind of newer ones. What's interesting about that group is that aside from Focalin, they are all the same active molecule. It's all methylphenidate. The difference is just the formulation, but the formulation can make a big difference. The formulation means when is the medication released, how much is released when, how long does it last? And what's fascinating to me about all these medicines is that that simple difference with the same molecule can make a wicked amount of difference within the same individual. So you can have side effects with one and not with the other. You can have different side effects with one versus another. You can have different levels of how well it works, or the efficacy, as we call it, depending on that formulation. And I mention that because I think a lot of times people do respond very differently to medications and don't totally understand why. And what ends up happening is you may try one of those medicines. Like, for example, you may try Concerta and go, ooh, I don't like the way that made me feel. I'm not going to take any stimulants ever again, right? Or I don't like the way that made me feel, so I'm not going to try any other options in that family of methylphenidates. I'm going to come over here to the amphetamines. And while I'm not saying that's necessarily always the wrong choice, I want to encourage people to know that the good news is we have a lot of options, although sometimes the challenging part is we have a lot of options. But just because one doesn't work for you or work well for you doesn't mean that something else might not.
And also the fact that we're looking at different compositions of these medications means that you're not taking meth.
Correct.
Like, don't let the methylphenidate fool you. I know that's all over the internet and it shows up in memes and stuff. Oh. You're not taking meth.
We're not taking meth. It is very, very different. Thank you very much for mentioning that, Brendan. Yes. Now, the other one I wanted to come back to, Focalin is just a little bit different. It's still within that methylphenidate family, but it's what we call dexmethylphenidate. And what makes it different is when we talk about methylphenidate as a whole, it's all one molecule, but there's actually what we call a racemic mixture, which means there are molecules that are mirror images of each other. They're both of those molecules are still considered methylphenidate, but they're actually kind of opposites of each other. In all the other formulations, you have both of those. We call them the right-handed and the left-handed, or the dex and the levo molecules. In Focalin, they took out the levo molecule or the left-handed molecule and left just the dex, with the idea being that this is the effective molecule and causes fewer side effects. Great in theory, and it works that way for some people. For some people, the Focalin is more effective than the other methylphenidates and more tolerable. For some people, not so much. For some people, they either have more side effects or it's less tolerable than the other medications. So that one's a little bit different. The other thing I want to point out before I jump over to the amphetamines is I mentioned different formulations. There's short-acting and there is long-acting. The short-acting methylphenidates last about 3 to 4 hours. And the long acting depends on the formulation. Some of them last 6 to 8 hours, all the way up 8 to 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours, all the way up to about 14 hours, depending on the formulation, but also depending on the human, because these medications are funny. Every person is a little bit different depending on how their liver processes or metabolizes these medications. Some people are what we call average metabolizers, meaning, for Concerta as an example, it's supposed to last 10 to 12 hours. If you are an average metabolizer, it will last 10 to 12 hours. If you are a slow metabolizer, meaning your body takes longer to process the medicine, it will last longer. If you are a fast metabolizer, meaning your body processes it quicker, it will last less time for you. Okay? And so this is one of the things where we really kind of, when we get into the fine tuning of medicine, if your medicine's lasting too long or not long enough, sometimes we can fix that by adjusting the dose. Sometimes we fix that by actually changing the formulation. And sometimes we fix that by putting together a long acting with a short acting. But this is where kind of the fine tuning of the medicine can really kind of come into play. Hopping over to the amphetamines. The amphetamines, honestly, same story, second verse. We have long acting, we have short acting. We have stuff that lasts about 3 to 4 hours, all the way up to stuff that lasts about 16 hours. And again, it depends on the person and it depends on their metabolism. The medicines in this group are going to be things like Adderall, Vyvanse, Dianavel, Mydeus is one of the longer lasting ones. There's a bunch of new ones in that group. Vyvanse, somewhat similarly to Focalin, is Dex. It's actually lisdexamfetamine. So it's also just that right-handed molecule, but it has another little interesting tweak to it that makes it what we call a prodrug. Basically means that its metabolism is a little bit more stable and there's less risk of being able to misuse it than some of the other medications. But other than that, they're very similar as far as you know, the difference in the amphetamine group is also things like the formulation, how quickly it's released, how long it lasts, that kind of thing. One of the primary differences between the methylphenidates and the amphetamines is how they work. Both groups increase available dopamine in the brain. Dopamine is one of the primary neurotransmitters that we think is one of the kind of big culprits in ADHD. And by increasing available dopamine in the brain, these medicines help our brain cells send signals to each other better and therefore function better and help with some of the symptoms of ADHD, such as the executive dysfunction, focus, attention, impulse control, et cetera, et cetera. They do it, though, in slightly different ways. So the methylphenidates increase available dopamine in the brain by blocking dopamine reuptake, which is a fancy way of saying it keeps the dopamine that we have made from getting taken out of the system and recycled too quickly. So it allows us to have the dopamine we make be available for signaling for longer and more. The amphetamines increase available dopamine by getting our brain cells to actually pump out more dopamine. Depending on your receptors, your body, your brain chemistry, one of these may work better for you than the other. For some people, either one would work, but it just kind of depends on the person.
And the main role of dopamine is it's the anticipation and reward chemical in the brain. It makes us want to do stuff.
Yes.
And so with ADHD, right, we kind of need that desire to do stuff, that motivation that often gets undermined by having ADHD. It's not that, like you said, it's not that I don't know what to do. It's that I'm not doing anything with what
it's
I know.
Getting my brain to do it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So you're totally right, Brendan. I think that's a great analogy. And so one of the ways I like to describe it is we are flip switch people, not dimmer switch people. We are on or we are off. And that's our energy, our motivation, task initiation, staying on task, emotional regulation, impulse control, you name it. And so what the medicine, hopefully at least, helps us do is have, sometimes I feel like it gives us a little bit more access to the dimmer action, but mm-hmm. more than that, I feel like it just gives us a little bit more control over the flipping of the switch.
An example of this, right, is I knew my Concerta was working when I went back onto it and knew a lot more about
right.
ADHD and Concerta.
Right.
I was off Concerta for a while because one of the side effects for me was it made it hard for me to regulate my emotions. And I was going through a really, really challenging time and I didn't need to be a grump. So I did the math. I can either be cranky with my kids or it can be harder for me to do stuff. And I decided harder to do stuff was the better choice of the two. This was during COVID when we were all locked in the house with each other. Like that's when that happened. I was like, I need to just not take the Concerta. But when I went back onto it, inside of like an hour or two, I saw something on the floor and bent over and picked it up and
yes!
was like, oh my God, that's not something I do. And it's not because I don't care that the thing is on the floor. Often it's not even because I don't see it. I'll see the pencil or whatever on the ground and I'll notice that it's there. But whatever part of my brain is supposed to say, pick that up and put it in a cup that holds pencils or in a drawer or something, that part of my brain doesn't activate. And I
okay.
just walk past the pencil going, huh, there's a pencil on the floor. And I can't explain it, but that's how my ADHD works.
Absolutely.
This time I bent over, picked it up, and I was like, Concerta.
Absolutely. Okay. And so since this is audio, so y'all cannot see me, I am currently freaking out and like jumping up and down in my chair because the example I was about to give for when I first started taking medicine was when I was walking up my stairs, picked up the item on the stairs, kept walking, put it away, and then went right back to doing what I was originally walking up the stairs to do. And had a moment where I paused and went, oh, that's how other people move?
Yeah. Really? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I think sometimes too, you know, I often get asked, how do you know if medicine is working? And sometimes it is very obvious, right? Sometimes you have that aha, holy crap, where has this been my whole life moment? And sometimes that's a big moment. And sometimes that's a little moment, like with us picking stuff up off, like it was a little thing, but it was still a big moment.
And critically, I think those little things, if you're not someone who works professionally with ADHD, you might not even realize that it happened. You right. might just pick the thing up and do whatever you do with it. And it won't occur to you that that means that your ADHD meds are working.
And that's exactly right. And sometimes my patients come in and they're like, oh my gosh, because they notice that moment. And sometimes I have to kind of really dig into the history and how their week has been and to really find those changes to bring them to their attention. Sometimes my patients notice it more than their parents. Sometimes parents notice it more than their patient, that the patient does. And sometimes it's really subtle stuff. And sometimes that means we're still adjusting the medicine. I always tell my patients, if it seems like I just gave you a Tic Tac, I tell them, if you're like, thanks for the Tic Tac, Dr. Parcells, then the good news is you're not having side effects. And that just means we just need to keep going and we need to keep titrating, which actually is a wonderful segue to how do we deal with these medicines? How do we start them, et cetera? Because the other thing that I think is really important for people to know is that the dosage of medicine, and this is one of the things that's also really unique about these medicines, it has nothing to do, or very little to do, I should say, with your age, your size, or your severity of illness, okay, your severity of your ADHD symptoms. It has everything to do with your personal, shall we say, milieu, your personal brain and body situation. So for everybody, child, adult, teenager, we typically start with the lowest or one of the lowest doses of these medicines, and we titrate or go up on the dose steadily until we reach the most effective, best tolerated dose, or until we get to the point where we go, yeah, this medicine's not working, either because of side effects or because we've kind of maxed it out and we're like, yeah, we're still not getting where we need to go. We need to try something else. And as a result, you know, the other thing I kind of tell people is it can, while these medicines work really quickly, because they do, unlike a lot of other medicines, these kick in within 30 to 60 minutes and then they're out of your system by the end of the day for the most part, unless you're a really slow metabolizer, but for the most part, and so what's great about that is we can adjust these medicines very quickly. We say 3 to 5 days. I usually like to use 7 days. But point is we can adjust them pretty quickly if you're tolerating it well. On the other hand, though, that doesn't mean we're going to hit the nail on the head right out of the gate. And it can take several doses of several different medicines for us to find the thing that works. And that can be really challenging. It can be really frustrating. You know, as people with ADHD, we're not exactly the most patient humans on the face of the earth. So that can be difficult. And that's part of why I really like to kind of set that expectation from the very beginning, because I want people to understand, again, the good news is we've got a lot of choices, but the bad news is we have a lot of choices.
And connected to that is the bias that comes around medication.
Yes.
Like there's so many parents who are like, I'm not going to put my kid on meds.
Yes.
And so they wait and they wait and they wait and they wait. And then things become untenable.
Crisis situation.
And yeah. And yep. Then they start playing with meds. And it's like,
right.
This is going to be a much harder experience for you because you waited so long and you want the meds to be a magic bullet and they're not going to be. They might be. That could happen. But it might not be. And you might be in this untenable situation that you've been in for another several months.
Yeah.
Adding in potentially side effects that are not that great.
Correct.
So move on medication earlier rather than later so you can avoid that.
And I'm so glad you brought that up because that's one of the things that I really again, try to stress to people and sometimes get a little bit frustrated about, because, and when I say frustrated, I don't necessarily mean with parents, because as a parent, I totally get it. I totally get it. It is way easier for us to make medical decisions for ourselves and accept whatever those consequences may be, side effects, et cetera, than to make those decisions for our kids. That is way more stressful. I completely get that. What frustrates me is that sometimes I feel like even other members of the medical community, my own colleagues, you know, sometimes we wait too long, or we don't encourage starting the process early enough. And I think we're doing better about that, but that's something that I want us as the medical providers to be comfortable with it so that we can help our patients be comfortable with it, because they're looking to us for that. And to that point, I get asked a lot, when do you start medicine? That's a great question. Honestly, the fact of the matter is if you are diagnosed or your child is diagnosed with ADHD, based on the DSM-5 criteria, that's that big fancy manual that we use to diagnose ADHD and other developmental behavioral mental health disorders, it is called ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. In order to be diagnosed with a disorder, it must be causing, part of the diagnostic criteria is it must be causing dysfunction or disorder in your daily life. So by definition, this means you don't just have these traits. It means that these symptoms are causing a problem in your life. So by definition, we have a problem. So by definition, we should be looking for the gold standard proactive solution. In pediatrics, we like to be proactive. We like to be preventative. So when we have a child with asthma, for example, come to see us, we don't wait until they're on a ventilator in the ICU to start gold standard preventative management. We have stages of preventative management that we use based on the severity of their illness. Same with diabetes. We don't wait for them to be in the ICU, unless, of course, that's just how they get diagnosed. Point being, we don't typically wait for people to be in crisis to start gold standard preventative measures. We should look at ADHD in the same way. So if we are diagnosed with ADHD, we by definition have a challenge, have an issue. So we should by definition be treating it. Does that mean that I am saying that every single child should start medication as soon as they're diagnosed? No, I'm not saying that, but it absolutely should be part of the conversation. All options for treatment should be part of the conversation as soon as someone's diagnosed. They're being diagnosed for a reason. So we need to be looking for whatever supports, whatever strategies may potentially benefit this person when they are diagnosed.
You mentioned preventative medicine. A while back, this is like pre-COVID, a while back, Barkley was talking about studies that were finding that giving kids ADHD meds was proving to be a preventative factor around like brain development and supporting brain development. Where does that stand? Because I haven't chased that down since it was like cutting edge research.
I'll be honest, I haven't looked for new research on that recently, but yes, there were some studies, some preliminary studies, I'm going to hedge a little, that suggested that treating ADHD with stimulant medications may actually improve our brain development. Kids with ADHD tend to be about 2 to 3 years behind frontal lobe development for same age, same gender peers. Okay. And there's some data out there to suggest that medication may actually help them catch up on that development some. To your point, and to be completely honest, again, I have not looked at this data recently. There may be new data one way or the other. There definitely needs to be more data before we say, yes, this is a thing. I don't think there is, at least not in my knowledge base, I'm not aware that there is enough data yet to say definitively that that is what is occurring. But it is really interesting and encouraging data to suggest that it's something we need to look into. And kind of to your point, again, one of the questions we always get is kind of what's the risk versus what's the benefit of starting medication for ADHD, especially for children? The answer is that what we have in the research, so there's that interesting tidbit, which is a potential positive. But what we have robust data on is that optimal treatment of ADHD definitively improves overall quality of life and decreases risk for depression, anxiety, school failure, relationship failure, work failure, drug use and abuse. Actually, not just drug, overall substance use and abuse decreases risk of addictive behaviors in general. In my experience, this is not part of that. That's all kind of from the same data set. In my personal experience, I see reduction in risk for things like eating disorders as well. And overall mental wellness. But now also, speaking of Barclay, he did research that shows that optimal treatment of our ADHD also improves our physical well-being and possibly extends our lifespan. Because taking care of our ADHD decreases our risk for accidents and injuries, but it also improves our ability to manage our own health, make positive lifestyle changes, maintain positive lifestyle changes, and things that are as simple as like, oh, I don't know, keeping our appointments for our doctors, taking our medications for our other things like high blood pressure, diabetes, whatever we may have, and overall taking better care of ourselves. So we know those are the benefits of optimally treating ADHD, and optimal treatment of ADHD for the majority of people with ADHD includes medication management. The risk of not treating ADHD is the other thing we have to talk about, because we talk a lot about the potential side effects and risks of the medicines, but we don't always talk about the side effects, the risks of not taking the medicine or of not treating ADHD. And again, the risks of not treating ADHD are the opposite of the benefits that I just mentioned of treating ADHD. But one of the big ones that I want to pull in, because I've seen this in the data, but I've also seen in personal experience, because it's one of the myths and misconceptions of ADHD medications, because they are controlled substances, is that they cause drug use or drug abuse. And that is, I want to be very, very clear, blatantly false. Yes, these medicines can be used inappropriately, and that is something we have to take very seriously. However, the data is incredibly clear that treating ADHD properly, including stimulant medication, significantly decreases the risk of drug use, abuse, or dependence. To the point where there was actually a really fascinating study done that I saw at one of the conferences where they looked at kids who were diagnosed with ADHD at the same time, early in childhood, and they compared the kids who were treated early versus kids who were treated later versus kids who were diagnosed and treated later. Because there's some question as to, does just the diagnosis help? And I do think having the diagnosis can help in a lot of ways. But what they found was the rates of drug use, abuse, and dependence were significantly elevated in the kids who were diagnosed but not treated. And it was equivalent to the kids who were diagnosed late. Mm-hmm. The kids who had benefit were the ones who were diagnosed early and treated early. And I can tell you from personal experience, if these kids get to my clinic after they have already discovered weed, we're in trouble. Very difficult for me to get them off the THC and to convince them that what I can do for them is better than what they found for themselves.
And the earlier you do that stuff, the harder it is to stop doing it and the greater the risk of addiction.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of docs out there that won't treat your ADHD if you are actively using THC products. But stopping the THC products is very difficult if we don't treat your ADHD.
I wanna touch on one thing, and then we're gonna have to go to the ending essential. We'll do a part two. One of the things that drives me bananas about ADHD meds and whether or not they work is that we don't use the same language for usage of medicine and not usage of usage of medicine. Because if we use medicine,
yes,
and there's a side effect that is problematic, we call it a side effect.
Right.
And if we don't use medication and there's a side effect that's problematic, we call it a symptom. And if we just had the same language, we would know that we're comparing apples to apples when right. we say, well, when my kid doesn't take meds, he like runs into traffic and is beating up on his little brother and can't focus in school. But when he does take his meds, he doesn't eat that much and has trouble sleeping. Those are both consequences of whether we took meds or whether we didn't take meds.
Absolutely.
And it's much easier to make the determination of, can I live with my kid eating a little bit less, or find a way to solve that problem by giving them higher caloric foods? And can I figure out a way to help my kid fall asleep?
And that's why I kind of like the term risk benefit ratio when we're talking about all of it, right? So what's the risk benefit ratio of taking medicine? What's the risk benefit ratio of not taking medicine? What's the risk benefit ratio of whatever other treatment options we're talking about? Because then you get to actually pull in concepts of time, effort, cost, side effects or consequences, whatever you want to call it. And I think it gives you a much bigger, clearer picture. And because, oh, by the way, each of those factors is going to be different for each individual and for each family. There's certain things that certain kids or certain families are willing to tolerate or can tolerate. For another family, that might not be an option or might not be tolerable. You have to take every single one of those factors into consideration if you're going to find a treatment plan that is correct and sustainable and optimal for not only the kid or the adult, but their whole family.
And just being mindful of time.
Which we're so good at. We're not time blind at all.
No, not even a little bit. Do you have any ending essentials that you'd like to share with our audience?
The thing I kind of always come back to when it comes to the medication conversation is this. Not just medication, but all treatment options for ADHD. There'll always be other voices. There'll always be voices telling you that your choice is right or your choice is wrong. There will be voices telling you that you are a great parent or a horrible parent based on those choices, or a good person or a horrible person based on the choices you're making for yourself. Nerds to that. You have to do what is right for you and for your family. And you have to fight for what is right for you and for your family. And it is not failure if you need help. It is not failure if you or your children need to take medication. It is not failure to fight for what you need for yourself or for your family. And don't let anybody else shame you into thinking otherwise.
Hey, you're still here. Nice. Thanks for staying focused all the way through. If you have any thoughts or questions about today's episode, feel free to email me at brendan@adhdessentials.com. And don't forget to check out the website, adhdessentials.com, and visit our Facebook community. I'm looking forward to talking to you again next week. In the meantime, keep focusing on improvement over perfection. 10% better is all you need.